suspects been detained and a knife recovered following the attack at lunchtime. Irish Police Superintendent Liam Geraghty describes the extent of some of the injuries.
One girl aged 5 years has sustained serious injuries and is currently receiving emergency medical treatment in CHI Temple Street. One boy aged 5 years and a girl aged 6 years who received less serious injuries were brought to CHI Crumlin for treatment. The boy has since been discharged.
13 women and children held hostage in Gaza will be released tomorrow afternoon. Qatari officials who've acted as mediators between Israel and Hamas say a four-day pause in fighting will begin 9 hours earlier, with aid allowed into Gaza. UK net migration levels have been revised to another record high. Number 10 admits last year's figure of 745,000 is too big and needs to come down. It's been claimed the government's failure to quickly respond to warnings of rising coronavirus cases in autumn 2020 led to preventable deaths. The COVID inquiries heard from Professor Dame Angela McLean, the UK's chief scientific advisor, about the second lockdown.
It felt like March all over again. We wait till the last possible moment. We delay and delay a decision, and then we have to slam the brakes on as hard as possible with the attendant social costs and economic.
Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary at the time of the pandemic, will be among key figures giving evidence next week. Typical households across Britain can expect energy bills to rise by around £94 next year. Regulator Ofgem has increased the cap on what suppliers can charge because wholesale prices have shot up. And England Test cricket captain Ben Stokes has ruled himself out of next year's Indian Premier League. He's taken the decision to manage his workload and fitness. Stokes came out of retirement for the Cricket World Cup. That's the latest. I'm Faye Rowlands.
This is Phoenix FM.
Weather on Phoenix FM. Proudly sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company for windows, doors, conservatories and extensions.
It will start this evening with dry conditions and widespread clear spells, but thick cloud will drift in from the north later on, bringing spells of light rain. Variable cloud and clear spells towards dawn. Friday, tomorrow morning, we'll see a mix of sunny spells and variable cloud for everyone, with a small chance of the odd shower drifting in. The skies will clear throughout the afternoon. And if you're planning for the weekend, the outlook for Saturday and Sunday, after a cold start to the day, Saturday will be dry with plenty of sunny spells. Another cold and clear night will follow, but Sunday is expected to become cloudy from the west, with the chance of some patchy rain by the evening.
Weather on Phoenix FM, sponsored by SEHBAC, the award-winning home improvement company, proudly serving Essex for over 50 years. Contact us on 0800 666 444 or visit sehbac.com for help with your home.
Well, thanks to Joe for Drive. Have a great show. I was too busy guessing with her at the end there, so she's missed out a track. I'll remind her to play it tomorrow. From now until 7 o'clock, it's me, Darren Mutu. Cricket with 98 Not Out.
On 98 FM and online, this is Phoenix FM.
Cricket, lovely cricket.
Thursday, the 23rd of November, 2023. Thanksgiving Day in the US. Good evening to all of my American friends. And if you're listening in the US, you will be tucking into your turkey as we speak. All washed down with a bit of pecan pie.
No, the cricket mat. Me and my girlfriend are dying. So we took a lift.
Thanks to Joe for Drive. I'm here till 7 o'clock. Lots to get through tonight. We'll be looking at the World Cup. Rahul Patil has been out there and he gives us the lowdown, not only on the final, but on the tournament itself. He's been there for the whole thing. All 6 weeks and 49 matches of it. There's some news from the counties. The fixtures for 2024 were released today. There's good news and there's bad news. Squads have been announced for the upcoming England tour to the West Indies. It's a white ball tour. We'll be taking a look at that. But as you might have just heard on the news, Ben Stokes has announced he has pulled out of the 2024 IPL to concentrate on fitness. I think he's due to have an operation. There's news about the 100 and it's not good. There's news about the BBC, which is also grim. And there's a bit of contract news from the counties as well, as pre-season preparations are now well underway.
Got to lick the ball before it reach the wicket. The players in a full suit
of white. And of course, remember, you are listening to Phoenix 98 on the FM dial in the central Essex area. You can listen via the internet. Just go to phoenixfm.com and click on Listen Live. You can go to Mixcloud as well. Or you can just shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. Many ways to listen. And if you can't stay for the whole show, or you start late, you can download the show later on this evening. I'll put it on the website, and I'll put the links all over social media, so you can download it, listen back, and share it with your friends. And if you want to get in touch, email radio@phoenixfm.com, title your mail 98 and about. Or, as many people have been doing today, use social media messaging. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, but not TikTok. Always like to hear from everyone. And today has been exceptional for people getting involved. Lots to get through. We'll squeeze it all in within an hour. And of course, we'll always start the same way. It's cricket birthdays of the week. And a motley crew, as always, this week, celebrating their birthdays. Starting off with Cameron Bancroft, 31. Stephen Mullaney, 37. Nathan Lyon, always remembered for dropping that fumble at Old Trafford. Nathan Lyon, 36. West Indies vice-captain Alzari Joseph, 27. Carl Hope, 35. Jermaine Blackwood, 32. Justin Langer, 53. Saw a really good interview with him on the YouTube this week. Andy Caddick, 55. Tim Robinson, 65. Will Jacks, 25. Will Young, the Kiwi cricket player, not the pop idol crooner, 31. Gary Kirsten, 56. Ahmed Shahzad, 32. Merv Hughes, 62. Ian Botham, 68. Kabir Ali, 43. Peter Siddle, 39. Alvira Peterson, 43. And listeners, Nicola Reitz and Louise Roberts. Happy birthday to everyone. And remember, if you want to have your birthday or someone you know added to that list, email radio@phoenixfm.com, title it 98 not out on birthdays, and just tell me who it is, and if you want to add anything to that, like their age or something interesting, just do that and I will add them to the list. Now, today is a very commemorative day for all cricket fans, because it was on this day back in 1755 that Thomas Lord was born. Now, Thomas Lord, there must be some of you that don't know who Thomas Lord is. I'm assuming most people do. But when you think of Lord, think of Lord's Cricket Ground. Yes, Thomas Lord is the Lord in Lords. So he was born on this day in 1755. Happy birthday to everyone around today that's celebrating.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Okay, let's just whisk through some of the news. There's a lot to get through, and I'll sort of spread it out through the show. I want to start with England's men's learning disability team. They extended their series win. Series winning run to 13 years. It's incredible. They beat Australia in the final of a tri-series the other day. Captain Chris Edwards made an unbeaten 52 and hit the winning runs as England chased down 141 in 16 overs and four balls. 16.4, that rings a bell somewhere, to maintain their perfect record in the tournament. Australia made 140 for 5 from 20 overs, but England chased it down. And in their last, though they chased that down in their last three games, they had confidence. South Africa were the other side involved, but they failed to win a game. The run of seven wins in the tournament means England have lost just two of their past 42 games since losing a series to Australia back in 2010. Well done to you guys. That's absolutely fantastic.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
Now, as I mentioned, with the World Cup over, there is now a white ball series out in the West Indies. England are heading out there. The squads have been named. I'll start with the West Indies. They've named a 15-member squad for the upcoming ODI series. Shai Hope will captain the side with Alzari Joseph, who was mentioned in the birthdays this week. He's vice-captain. The squad includes two uncapped players, all-rounder Shafane Rutherford and seam bowler Matthew Ford. There are recalls for Shane Dowrich and Kieran Ottley. The three-match series starts in Antigua on Sunday the 3rd of December. After the ODI series concludes, West Indies and England will meet in five T20s from the 12th to the 21st of December. Now, on the England side, Matt Potts replaces Josh Tung, who remains injured in England's ODI squad. Moeen Rashid Wokes dropped from the World Cup squad, but they are included in the T20 side. David Milan misses out completely. As we know, there has been a lot of controversy about that. Okay, we'll have a bit of music, and then I shall come back with Rahul Patil. If I can get the music to start. I'll tell you what, we won't do that. It's live.
Across
it's
Brentwood
live.
And Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
The 2023 ICC World Cup in front of 130,000 adoring fans. What do you mean they did? Hang on. Australia won? Really? Rahul, tell me, what happened?
Yep, Australia have won their sixth world title in the ODI format and not going to plan at all for India in Ahmedabad last night.
It was all looking like it was destiny. All the performances all the way through, they won every single game. Virat was getting hundreds on his birthday, on Diwali. Surely it was meant to be. What do you think happened?
Yeah, it's a long story. I mean, you're right in saying that this was not the plan. The fairy tale ending would have been the fact that they won 11 out of 11, went into the tournament, finished it unbeaten, and picked up a world title on their way. But such is life and such is cricket that you can have 10 good days, but on the day that it mattered the most, they fell apart. And there's a few reasons. I mean, with the batting, with the bowling. I'd just like to start by saying that sometimes in life, when you want something really badly and you put all your energies into it, it's like when you go to the beach and you have fine sand and you try and grasp that sand and close your fist and firmly try to hold it in your hand, and it keeps slipping through your fingers. And with India in the last few ICC tournaments, at least, we've seen that happen quite a bit. You know, they play real good cricket to come to the semis and the finals and just don't seem to have that edge or X factor that you need in a final situation, or they just completely collapse like a bit like what happened yesterday. And yeah, it's a bit of nerves, a bit of bad decision making, but I think most of all it was panic and yeah, which led to the downfall.
Yeah, the India's never struck me as being a nervous side. Confidence has never seemed to be an issue, and they always play with a certain confidence. But, yeah, it didn't go to plan yesterday. I mean, it was an amazing occasion with such a huge crowd. And at the start of the game, when India went off like a firecracker, the atmosphere, I mean, I was only watching it on TV, but you could hear the noise that was coming through. And but it was amazing that as the game turned, that fervent crowd atmosphere, it just seemed to disappear completely.
Yeah, you're right. Like, look, Rohit Sharma has been phenomenal at the top of the innings for India. And like he did in every other game, he got them off to an absolute flyer. The thing is, that high-risk approach of his is fraught with danger. So you are going to get times when he's going to play, look stupid playing a high risk shot and get out. Fantastic catch by Travis said. I mean, what a catch. You know, it's one of those catches where the more you watch it on replays, the better it keeps getting, you know. But to do that in front of 120,000 people and silence the crowd was just phenomenal. But I think somewhere when they were three down and Kohli and KL Rahul got together and started stitching up a partnership, I think somewhere at the back of their mind, they forgot the aggressive approach that had been successful for them all tournament. And especially KL Rahul seemed to go into a shell a bit. You know, he took a long time to even find singles on that wicket. Yeah, the boundaries were difficult. It wasn't the best of wickets. It was slow. It was low. And the ball wasn't coming onto the bat. But surely you can pick up singles. And I saw a stat wherein Mitch Maas and Travis had bowled 4 overs for 9 runs. Now, you cannot let the sixth and the seventh bowler, not even the fifth and the sixth and the seventh bowler get away for 4 overs for 9 runs. And there was a bit of tinkering with that lineup also because Surya Kumar Yadav, who's designated to come in at number 6, was held back for some reason. And Ravi Jadeja was sent ahead of him. Now, I do know that they probably thought a left-right combination at that stage might do the trick. But once again, in a big game, it's tinkering with your batting order. And I don't think that worked out really well. 240 was below par. You know, it was about 30 runs short of what the par score on that surface would be. I think it was a 270, 275 kind of surface. And once you got a below par score, you're always going to be chasing your tail right throughout.
That's right. And I think also what was interesting was the mantra of this tournament so far has been to bat first. Whatever the conditions, bat first. So it was very brave of Pat Cummins, having won the toss, to put India in. I thought that was very, very interesting and a really ballsy call.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they read the pitch brilliantly, you know. And I think they were helped by the fact that when they played India in Chennai, they had a similar surface. And they batted first that time. They only got 199. They had India down 3 wickets for 2 runs. But still, because of the dew and the lights coming on, the pitch got better and better to bat on as the day went by. And they realized that and they said, okay, and they learned from it. And they said, next time we come up against a pitch like this, we're not going to get scared that this is going to turn square in the second inning. We're actually going to bowl first. And but choosing to do the right thing was a big part of it. But actually executing that on the biggest stage of them all is something else. And all their bowlers, Stark included, Hazelwood, Captain Cummins himself, Adam Zampa, and Glenn Maxwell, what a revelation. You know, all of those 5 guys really put their hand up when it mattered most. And that's a sign of a champion team when Kamidar, they deliver. You know, they know how to win big moments. And it was yet another fantastic bowling performance by them.
Yeah, it's almost in the Australian sporting DNA to, on the big occasion, on the big stage, to just step up, whether it's cricket or even rugby as well. They just find that bit of steel and a bit of metal as well. I was a little bit getting very excited at the end of the Indian innings, saying, oh my God, and you're right, 240 was below par. It was, as you say, a 270, 280 pitch. But I did remind people, and I put it on Twitter, that England skittled India for 230 and still managed to lose by over 100 runs. So even at that stage, I was thinking, hang on, guys, don't get excited. Don't get ahead of yourselves. And then I think when Virat took that catch to dismiss Warner and the crowd went absolutely crazy, that, and I certainly thought at that point, well, we know what's going to happen here. The prediction is going to happen in the most incredible way.
Yeah, no, you're right. Just another subtle thing that they kind of changed in a big game is right throughout this tournament, they've opened with Bumrah and Siraj. But yesterday, for some reason, they chose to go with Shami. Now, there's 2 reasons the team does that. Is And this is my reading of it, that they knew that they didn't have enough on the board, and they knew they had to pick up early wickets. So they thought, who can we go to who's going to give me early wickets? Well, let's go to the guy who got 7 in the last game, in the hope that he's going to continue that form and give me more wickets in this game. Now, you've got to remember, that's also sending a message to Siraj that's saying, we don't think you're good enough to bowl with this new ball. We don't think you are capable of getting us those wickets. Shami is more capable than you. So I found that quite bizarre, and that too on a big stage like a final. As we saw it, yes, Shami did pick up a wicket, but he sprayed that new ball all over the place. Bumrah went for 15 in his first over. That is not the Bumrah we know.
Uh-huh.
You know, Shami sprayed that ball everywhere. Yes, he got that wicket, but Warner would be really disappointed with the shot. It was way wide, and it would have been called wide if he had left it alone. And India picked a couple after that. Mitch Marsh, poor shot again. Short, wide outside off stump, could have really let it go. Went for a big cut outside off stump, got the nick. And Stephen Smith got beautiful delivery by Bumrah to fox him, but was struck outside the line of the off stump. So if he had reviewed it, that wouldn't have been a wicket. So India picked up 3 wickets, and they have 40-odd. They had Australia 40-odd for 3. But all those wickets came out of errors by the batters rather than some great deliveries or something like that. And that's the crux of it, that, you know, as I said, the more desperate you go trying for wickets, the more further those wickets keep going away from you, because all you need to do in a situation like that is be patient, bowl good lines, bowl good lengths. And in an attempt to kind of blow the Australians out of the park, they kind of sprayed that white ball everywhere, and which didn't help. Now, the other interesting stat, Jadeja came in as first change. Kuldeep comes in as second change. Siraj only comes to bowl over number 17. And in the first 36 overs, Siraj had bowled 3. So, you know, it's just like you made this game into a four-bowler game. You basically reduced Mohammad Siraj to a non-starter, and this is the same Mohammad Siraj who not so long back in that Asia Cup final against Sri Lanka got a 6 for bowling beautiful outswingers with the new ball. And I just found that really bizarre, that on a big stage and all at the back of Rohit Sharma saying, we're not going to change anything, we're just going to treat it like another game. But when that pressure was on, I think they made some poor choices.
Now, I found it really strange. You mentioned Steve Smith's dismissal. I just don't get why he didn't take it upstairs, because, as you say, it was it would have clearly gone in his favour if he had done so. I don't get why. And they had reviews in the bag as well. Just why didn't he do it?
Yeah, so I've got a theory for that. Steve Smith is such a genius that and geniuses are fraught with brain fades or mind lapses every so often. I know of a scientist who apparently designed a mouse trap or something, so he made a door for the mouse to come in, and then he made another door for the mouse to go out without thinking that the mouse could use the same door to go in and out. Steve Smith's a bit of a scientist like that. You know, he's so lost in his own game and his own thoughts, and he's such a brilliant batsman that I think he forgets sometimes that... And I think his partner's to be blamed as well, because I clearly saw him have a conversation with Travis Head and saying, what do you think? And I think Travis Head gave him the marching orders and said, I think that's plumb, mate. So the only discussion I think Travis Head asked him is, did you hit it? And Steve said, no, I didn't. I missed it. He said, if you missed it, you were out, mate. And off he went. But yeah, one of those moments where when he sat in the dressing room, he'd be gutted. And if Australia had lost this game...
Oh, my God.
Just yeah. Imagine being Steve Smith and sitting there thinking, jeez, I should have reviewed it.
But Travis Head made up for it. A glorious innings. 100 in a World Cup final. Doesn't get any better, does it?
Nah, and not the first time that he's delivered on the big stage. Not so long back, we played Australia. When I say we, India played Australia.
You're a Kiwi now, mate.
I know. In a World Test Championship final, and it was Mr. Head who got 163 in the first innings of that test, and won man of the match there as well. So yeah, he's a real cricketer. He reminds me a lot of Virendra Sehwag, just because of the way he plays. He's got this habit of staying inside the line of the ball, doesn't really get in line. He likes room outside the off stump. And he's got fantastic hand-eye coordination, and he's got the gift of timing. When he hits them, they stay hit. I saw a couple of sixes that he hit last night. It's not a small ground, Ahmedabad. And they went about 20 rows back, and that just shows you that he's a serious, serious batter. If you don't get him quickly, he's going to hurt you. And that's exactly what happened. He was very lucky. Indians had him in all sorts of trouble with the new ball. But once he survived that period, obviously, there was no stopping him.
No, that's right. That's right. And a word also about Rahul Dravid. His coaching and his management of this team, he's very much been in the background, which I think has helped. And the spotlight has been held by, some of the big name players. But I think Dravid's definitely had an impact on this team.
Yeah, he's very understated. Even in his playing days, he used to do his job and he used to always grow up in the shadow of the great Sachin Tendulkar and was never in... he was a brilliant batter himself, but I think Sachin got all the limelight in that kind of era. But yeah, he's a very, very humble person. Once he finished playing, he kind of went and worked a lot with the under-19 side and the India A side because he said, my mission in life is not to be India coach, but to provide India with the next generation of players. And did a brilliant job, won a under-19 World Cup for India also with the boys there. And he was criticized a lot because, when India got absolutely spanked by England in that T20 World Cup semi-final, Dravid came under a lot of criticism. Even before this World Cup, there was a lot of chopping and changing, experimentation going on. He was trying out a whole lot of different players. And people were raising a lot of eyebrows and pointing a lot of fingers. But I think he knew that there was a method to his madness. And when the tournament came, India basically played the same 11 throughout, except for the fact that they lost Hardik Pandya halfway through. And then Mohammad Shami came, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise anyways for India. But and I think personality-wise, he and Rohit Sharma are the right fit. I don't think he would have been the right fit with Kohli. But with Rohit Sharma, both of them are very cool, calm, and Rohit's a real laid-back person. They're a good gel. It's a bit like Stokes and McCullum. They're both the kind of marriage made in heaven, and a good coach-captain combination works really well. So he's done a great job. His contract's finished. I just read the other day. I didn't even know that. So today is the last day of him as India coach, in the sense that now discussions will start between him and BCCI whether he wants to continue or what happens in that space. So with this campaign ends his contract, and India is due to play a series in 3 days' time against Australia, T20 series. So we don't know.
Crazy scheduling.
So we don't know who the coach is going to be for that series.
Well, it's been quite a year for these two great cricketing nations. I was at the Oval at the start of the English summer for the World Test Championship final between India and Australia. An amazing occasion. It was a gloriously hot day, very unusual in this country, but a hot week. The whole occasion was really hot and fantastically supported as well. It was a bit more of a mixed crowd than we saw at Ahmedabad. There were plenty of vocal Indians, but lots of Aussies as well, because I guess there's lots of Australians living in London, but they like to travel as well. But there again, Australia edged India to win the title. It's not been a bad year for Australia. They started with winning that, then they retained the Ashes against England and finished the year by lifting the World Cup. It's good times for Australians.
Yeah, and if you just go back a little while, they won the Ashes at home, and they won the T20 World Cup in 2021 when it was held in the UAE as well. So apart from that T20 World Cup, which was held in Australia last year, where they didn't make it to the semi-finals, it's been a great ride for them. Even the coach of the Aussies, Andrew McDonald, very, very understated and stays in the shadows. He's not the Justin Langer who comes out and and kicks trash cans and throws bottles of water around. But he clearly gets the job done. There are lots of questions raised about Pat Cummins's captaincy over the years, but I think he's put all those debates to rest now with these back-to-back world titles. And as I said, you know, as soon as they smell the fact that they're in with a chance, you can never count them out. The world knows that they are in knockout tournaments or in the knockout stages of any tournament. If there's one team you do not want to face, it's Australia, because you know they're going to come up with some aces up their sleeve. So, they're a phenomenal team.
They are. And just now that it's all over, and all the posters come down and all the fireworks are put away and all the rest of it, what are your thoughts on looking back as this tournament overall? Has it been a success? What's been good? What's been bad?
Look, when the whole thing started, and I guess it didn't start on a very good note, because the first things first, the scheduling came out really late. You know, for a tournament of this magnitude, and for people like myself who came all the way from New Zealand, we wanted the schedule so that we can start booking our flights, accommodation, because the longer you wait, obviously things start getting more and more expensive. So not the best as far as scheduling. Then it came out and then it was changed again. So that was a nightmare. Some of the ticketing has been shambolic from what I gather. I've been to all the places and all the grounds, and just the fan experience with the whole ticketing thing has been absolutely shambolic. The outfield in Dharamshala, you know, we saw games in Dharamshala where the outfield was quite poor. They have been affected badly by the weather, so I can understand, but then it's not like the BCCI couldn't find another place to have those matches, you know, if they had a problem. But clearly, they stuck to the fact that they wanted to have games there. So all of that has been pretty, pretty poor in terms of administration and management. But on the other hand, there's been accusations of the fact that the BCCI is the Indian team is bowling with different balls compared to some of the other teams. There's been accusations of pitch doctoring, and there's been accusations of toss fixing now against India as well. And I was so glad that Rohit Sharma lost the toss yesterday. I said at least we'll put to rest all those accusations of toss fixing and this and that. I think they might be incompetent, but to question their integrity is not fair, and it's uncalled for. Yes, they did get a few things wrong. And the on-field action took a bit of time to get going. We didn't get those close games that we got so often in 2019. So, but then I think that is also a sign of the difference between the teams has increased so much now that when you get one-sided games, you got really horribly one-sided games. But then there were some amazing success stories. Look at Afghanistan, look at Netherlands, such beautiful stories of those two nations. Nobody picked the Kiwis to make it to the semi-finals, and yet once again, come semi-final time, there was one familiar name, they called New Zealand. Pakistan were mercurial, as they always are. Like Nasser Hussain says, one moment up, next moment down. And then up again. There were glimpses of brilliance. We had that fantastic 200 by Glenn Maxwell on 1 foot.
I think that was innings of the tournament, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, to win a game against Afghanistan, so that was there. We had that game where the Black Caps almost pulled off the impossible by chasing down 388 that Australia sent them and came within a shot of winning that. The tournament has had its ups and downs, but through all of it, we saw some good cricket as well. Lots of new stars on the horizon, so you know the future looks really good. None bigger than Rachin Ravindra, 300s, over 500 runs. I mean, and all from a guy who, if Michael Bracewell had been fit, wouldn't have been in this World Cup.
Yeah, that's right.
In the first place, you know. So, talk about fairy tale stories and real romantic stories. That was so. Yeah, we've had some fantastic highlights.
I think it was a great tournament overall, and I think you have to, you know, part of the chaos is how is holding these tournaments in different places. You know. You know that if it's going to be in England, it's going to be efficient and all the rest of it, well managed. And you have to accept that it's part of the DNA of India that certain things are going to happen that way. My only criticism would be the length of it. It was 6 weeks, 48 games. Now, I like the format. I like the fact that everyone played everyone else. So even if you were the small team, you would get to mix it with the big boys. But I think it could have been made more efficient. It could have been, the time could have been cut down. But the simple fact of having two games a day, particularly in the early stages, because you would have cut it down, you'd have made it a little bit more intense, you'd have increased the pressure a little bit. There's no need to just have one game a day, particularly on a country that's so big and the venues are so spread out. And everywhere has multi-channels, so you can still watch whatever game you want. That's my only thing.
No, I tend to agree with you. And even going one step further, I would actually like all the teams to be in Mumbai and play games over there. Then the whole thing moves to Pune, which is the next stage, and play games there. And then all of them move to Bangalore, and then they play their games there, whoever needs to play whoever. And then they move to Chennai, which is close by again. And do it so that it is so fan-friendly and media-friendly as well. Because right now, I tell you, I was trapezing all over the country, literally. So I started off in Ahmedabad, went to Hyderabad, then down to Chennai, up to Dharamshala, down to Pune, then to Bangalore, then to Mumbai for the semi. So, from a logistical point of view, it was a nightmare to kind of just... maybe if we had used your idea of two games a day, and my idea of keeping all the teams in one venue, or maximum spread them across two venues.
Yeah.
So that, you know, they're not playing across 10, 15 different venues like this. It's just, and they did that brilliantly during the T20 World Cup in Australia. So when you went to Melbourne, you got three or four games, then you moved on to Adelaide and you got three or four games, and then you went to Brisbane and you got three or four games. So it was kind of done in that fashion. But yeah, as you said, the length of it could be cut down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you've got a journey back home to New Zealand. What's next in store for Rahul?
I hope something big after this. I have been freelancing three or four different outlets while I've been here. And the New Zealand home summer is coming up of cricket. So we've got South Africa and we've got Australia coming this year for test matches. So two tests each versus South Africa and Australia. And then we've got white ball cricket with Pakistan and Bangladesh and a bit of Australia in the mix as well. So, there's a lot of cricket coming up at home. I'm looking at getting hopefully a commentary gig doing either radio back home. I will still be writing. I'll still be doing podcasts. I started doing a couple of podcasts with some local radio stations back home, and they've been really good. I set myself a goal that maybe in about 6 months' time, I'll say thank you very much to my daytime full-time job with ANZ. They've been really, really good, but this is where my life and I see myself and my passion is. So would love to do this full-time. So... there's anybody out there in the UK who likes the way I speak and, you know, give me a shout and I'd love to do something and collaborate in some way or the other. That's what is in store for me now.
Well, of course. And if anyone's interested and is listening to this or even watching it on YouTube, get in touch by the comments and I will put you in touch with Rahul. And let's make this guy's dream come true. Rahul, been fantastic talking to you today. Always a pleasure. And I guess we'll have to catch up with you in the New Zealand summer and we'll pick an interesting game or series that's going on and we'll get you to report back from there.
Awesome, Darren. Like always, it's been a pleasure. Go well. And I see the sun shining pretty brightly outside your window at the moment, at least. So hope it's not a very cold day.
If it's sunny this time of year, that means it's cold. But go back and enjoy the New Zealand summer and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
That's Rahul Patil, who is a contributor to many things, but if you can check out his main blog, sportsfreak.co.nz, which I put the link on the show page so you can have a look at that. But great stuff from him, and very kind of him to report back from India on a very eventful tournament and an even more eventful final. And just for the... I'm going to play a record to all of those Indian fans at the Mahendra Modi Stadium for their superb reaction to Australia's victory.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light to split the night and touch the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one did disturb the sound of silence. Who said I, you do not know? Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell, echoing the wind of silence. Sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, the tenement halls, whispering the sounds of silence.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
The December issue of the Cricketer magazine is out now, and we look back at England's disastrous World Cup campaign. Vic Marks says England wrote off 50-over cricket and paid the price, while George De Bell argues that Rob Key is under pressure for the first time. Editor Hugh Turbeville, meanwhile, argues that England seem to be winging it at the moment, while Barney Roney writes his final column for the Cricketer from the World Cup. And Nasser Hussain picks out where England went wrong. We also have an exclusive Stuart Broad interview. David Gower pays tribute to Sir Alistair Cook. We have an interview with Yorkshire's Finlay Bean and Darren Goff. And Mike Selvey pays tribute to Bish and Beddy. That's the December edition of the Cricketer magazine, out now.
I'm John Sharma, inviting you to join me here on Phoenix FM on Saturday afternoons for Phoenix Sport. The top local, national and international sports stories, plus live scores, results, reports, interviews, quiz questions and my sporting anniversaries. And lots of great music too. That's Phoenix Sport, every Saturday from 3 till 6pm here on Phoenix 98 FM.
Every Wednesday on Phoenix 98 FM at 7pm, it's the Orient Hour, bringing you the news, views and special guest interviews from the Breyer Group Stadium, Brisbane Road. Join us every Wednesday at 7pm on Phoenix 98 FM for the Orient Hour.
And my thanks to Andy Gilson for bringing in the biscuits. I'll moan at him every week because I keep coming in and finding cheapo substitutes, but he's actually gone and done the business this week. There is a big tub full of Kit Kats, wagon wheels, both plain and jammy. And if Spencer Carter is listening, if you were looking forward to getting hold of some wagon wheels on Saturday, Spencer, unlucky, they're gone.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
And I meant to say, if you missed, well, I made a mess of the beginning of that interview with Rahul, but if you want to hear the whole thing, head to the 98 Not Out podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and the whole interview, the unedited one, is on there, and you can download that. Wherever you get your podcasts, just look for 98 Not Out, and in fact, all of our guest interviews going back quite a long way are all there for you to listen back and enjoy.
Across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM.
It's been a busy day today. The county championship fixtures are out. And just staying locally, Essex begin with a trip to Nottinghamshire on a Friday, the 5th of April. That's followed a week later with the visit of Kent to Chelmsford. The T20 Blast campaign starts on Thursday, the 30th of May, away to Gloucestershire. And then the Metro Bank One Day Cup starts on Tuesday, the 24th of July, at home to Warwickshire. But the one thing that's got everyone, not just Essex fans, county cricket fans from across the country, got their heckles raised. Everyone's got their back up with the news that Middlesex are going to play two home T20 outground fixtures at the county ground, Chelmsford. I should say the Cloud County Ground, Chelmsford. Why are they doing this? Well, the explanation they've given is that, and we've heard this from Essex have before said similar things, but Middlesex, and we know that they're in financial difficulty, have just said that the cost of playing at outgrounds is getting prohibitive, and they've struck a deal with Essex, who I think are also in need of extra cash, that two home games that would have normally been played at Radlett or wherever else, they Merchant Taylors, they usually play their outgrounds cricket, but they're coming to the county ground at Chelmsford. So T20 at Chelmsford is always a good occasion. Essex should profit from the bar takings, but not very many people are happy. Essex fans, Middlesex fans, county cricket fans are asking, why are they doing this? Now, Essex haven't played outground cricket for quite a long time, and I think it was 2015, maybe, the last time they played up at Colchester. And the reason was given that it's just cost too much to up sticks from Chelmsford and plant everything, plant the marquees, seating, hoardings, pitches, etc., etc. It's just becoming too prohibitive. So it's kind of showing you how cash-strapped counties are, and even someone of Middlesex's stature, although they've had all kinds of restrictions imposed on them, but it's not looking good. There's lots of calls for them, for Middlesex to rethink this, I'm not quite sure how far anyone's going to get with that, but that is what's grabbing the headlines today. And if you look down social media, if you follow 98 Out anywhere, you will see that there's all kinds of people commenting, complaining. Elizabeth Ammon, who writes for The Times, has said that really they should, Middlesex should just fold and MCC become a professional county in its own right. I don't quite know how that would work, but there's just general anger at the state that county cricket is getting itself into. And of course it plays into the hands of those that favour the 100. But more of that in just a minute.
98 FM. This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Yeah, before we start talking about the 100, I just want to just point out the official Abu Dhabi pre-season tour featuring Essex, Somerset, Nottinghamshire, Yorkshire and Warwick is taking place. Now, not just travel Holiday Company are offering a four-star package tour to watch all of the cricket and a chance to meet the players and coaches as well. I've put the details on our Facebook page and you can see the whole thing. It looks fantastic. It's in March. If you want, if you're interested and fancy a little bit of Middle Eastern sunshine, and the grounds at Abu Dhabi are absolutely fantastic as well. Email or get in touch with Warren at Not Just Travel. His phone number is 07444 559 854. That's 07944 559 854. The details, the full details, are on the 98 Not Out Facebook and Twitter page. So if you are interested in that, get in touch.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Now, I mentioned the 100, and this has got a lot of attention this week. There was... this is a real worry for the smaller counties in the English cricket setup. And while this is dressed up as basically giving them a chance and expanding the 100, it also puts up huge hurdles, namely the size of the stadiums. And if you if your stadium isn't more than doesn't hold more than 10,000, then you're going to be struggling no matter what they do. So the 100 is set to, according to what's been put in the Daily Mail and in the Daily Telegraph this week and widely shared elsewhere, the 100 is set to expand to 10 teams, with the eight counties offered the chance to form a second, the eight other counties offered the chance to form a second division, and the theoretical, note theoretical, possibility of promotion as part of a £1 billion relaunch of the competition. Now, in the Daily Mail, they said they can reveal details of radical new plans to be discussed by the 18 counties, with the ECB emboldened by receiving a £1 billion valuation for... It's hard to say that without sounding like Dr. Evil, isn't it? A £1 billion valuation for a 10-team 100 from accountancy firm Deloitte. The ECB have owned all of the 800 teams since the new format was launched 5 years ago, but are willing to hand over 51% of each of the franchises to their constituent counties. So far, so good. But this is just dripping in money. Where's the cricket in all this? The franchises would then have the option to sell some or all of their 51% stake, see where this is going, to private investors in the hope of growing the competition and increasing the amount of money available for player salaries. IPL teams and owners of American sports franchises have already expressed interest in buying into 100 teams, but will not submit formal offers until the new structure of the competition is clear. The transfer of ownership from the ECB and the possibility of private investment could be improved in time for the start of the 2025 season, although launching two more teams is likely to have to wait until the start of the next broadcast cycle in 2028. New 100 teams in the South West and the North East have been earmarked by the ECB and could be launched before 2028 if the current TV rights holder Sky Sports give their approval. I think if they want to get ultimately their own way, they're going to do that. The possibility of switching from 100 balls to a T20 at some point remains on the table, but again, that would not take place until after 2028. The ECB's ambitious plans also include proposals for the launch of a second division of the 100 for the eight other counties, although they have yet to confirm whether promotion to the top tier would be possible. So this is in a system similar to what we're seeing in Premiership Rugby. However, the team going would also have to demonstrate that they meet certain minimum standards, such as the 10,000-seater capacity stadium, for example. Promotion would not be guaranteed every season. So straight away, if you're Essex, Chelmsford doesn't hold 10,000. What are they going to do? How are they going to step up? If that's a criteria that's set, what are they going to do? Do they have the money to expand? Do they have the room to expand? I think not. So under one proposal to be discussed, a single promotion spot could be offered via a playoff with the bottom-placed 100 team each season. In addition to gaining the backing of 12 of the 18 counties, the proposals would need to be approved by Sky Sports, who hold the broadcast rights for the 100 until 2028 and are expected to extend their contract beyond that date. Therefore, no changes will be made until 2025 at the earliest. It just gets worse. The 100 will continue to take place in a three-week August window aimed at attracting family crowds and a bumper TV audience. Despite the proposals to expand it, it's understood that the county's T20 blast would remain in place earlier in the season, with its focus switching to attracting a social and party audience with games played primarily on Thursday and Friday evenings. That sounds good, but how long would that last? And actually, there's good news in the fixtures that were announced today. I noticed there were a lot more high-season cricket being played with a red ball, and particularly over the weekends. So, you know, depending on which way you look, there's good news, but to me, this is the one that really is going to be a growing shadow over the game over the next 5 years. Elsewhere, the BBC could lose another top sporting event as free-to-air rivals hover for cricket rights. Now, a day after admitting its Six Nations rugby coverage was in danger, the Beaver being hit for six over Test match highlights, T20 Summer Internationals and 100 matches, the BBC's juggling falling income with a desire to keep showing major sport. Football's World Cup, tennis at Wimbledon and the Olympics are amongst the few elite events that are still saved for the BBC. But the Times has said the national broadcaster is braced for a fight over cricket when its current deal ends next year. Channel 4 is being seen as the terrestrial station most likely to compete with the BBC, so I guess it will stay on free-to-air, which is the main thing. The ECB are looking to boost their own funding, and a highlights package is the best way to do that with international cricket. That's because the ECB's deal for live coverage with Sky Sports is fixed until 2028. Sky Sports, again, holding all the cards. The BBC currently broadcasts test highlights, two men's T20 internationals, one women's T20 game, and up to 1,000 matches, but the corporation might see cricket fall beyond its boundary for spending. Not good, not good at all. We will keep you posted. Remember to follow us on Twitter and all social media. I'll try and keep you up to date with all of that. And just quickly, time to mention that Essex batter Nick Brown has extended his contract until the end of 2024. That's great news, but there's controversial news over at Sussex, where Ali Orr has left the club to join Hampshire on a long-term deal. He was seen as being a real prospect for the club, but that seems to have sailed into the sunset now, and there's a lot of upset there. Matt Pryor's been particularly vocal on Twitter, so yes, not good. Right, I'm out of time. Keep it locked to Phoenix. John Chubb is waiting in the wings with the excellent non-league hour. At 8 o'clock, Gareth Williams is here with Bumper to Bumper, and then Madeline Christie's here at 10 with her excellent selection of music. I'll be back next Thursday night at 6. If you want to listen back, head to phoenixfm.com and look for programs, look for 98. You can download tonight's show right there and you can listen back. Playing us out tonight, eventually, is Van Halen. This is Jump. I'll catch you next week.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM. News.